Are you ready for homeschooling to feel joyful again? Do you long for support as you learn alongside your kids? Welcome to Homeschool Better Together, a podcast about building a homeschool experience that works for your family. I'm Pam Barnhill, and it's time to step out of the overwhelm and into the wonder. Let's do this.
Hello again. This is Lainey Homan, and I'm so glad to be back with you today on the Homeschool Better Together podcast. Today, I am joined by my good friend, Carla Schlatter, who is going to talk with me about project-based learning in our homeschools. Carla is a mom of four boys. She has been homeschooling for 6 years. She is passionate about lifelong learning, asking good questions, staying curious, and building a home where learning doesn't stop when school ends. Welcome, Carla. So I'm so thankful that you just decided to join me today.
Thank you, Lainey. I'm glad to be here. This is a subject I'm very passionate about.
Well, I know you are. Carla and I are actually in-person friends, and our boys do classes together that Carla leads. She's been working with my son, my high schooler, for several years now. Our boys have done some sort of cooperative learning together. And I knew that she was just going to be the perfect person to invite to have this discussion with, because I have dabbled a little bit in project learning in the past with my daughter. We'll get into that a little bit in this episode. But Carla has been the one that has kind of helped me branch out a little bit further into that, and especially bring it into a group setting. And she is a huge asset to my homeschool. And so I really wanted to invite her on today to talk with us about this topic that she is so passionate about. So first of all, I would love to invite you to just kind of share with our listeners who you are, how you got into project-based learning, what your journey into homeschooling is like, and what brought you here.
Well, I'm sort of a late homeschooler. I didn't start homeschooling until my youngest was in second grade. But if we go back to much earlier, I became convicted very early in my boy's life that I wanted to raise lifelong learners. And that's always been a passion of mine. And out of that, I was looking, what can I get these boys doing? What can we be doing to learn? And so they went to private school and they went to public school. And I considered it my job to complement their learning. And so I was always finding books for them to read, finding projects for them to work out. And then the pandemic came, and they all ended up back home. And for a variety of reasons, three of them decided that they'd probably just rather stay home and learn with me. Yeah. And one continued. So one of my sons graduated from public school, but he would be the first to tell you that he's done a ton of project-based learning. And we'll probably talk about a couple of the projects he's worked on. So I don't think it's unique to homeschool, but I think it's a great tool to use in your homeschool.
Well, I would definitely agree with that. And I know that you are not the only one who joined us after the pandemic and kind of stuck with it. I have talked to a number of other mamas who this is kind of the start of their homeschooling journey. It was like, we brought the kids home and we just really, we saw something different maybe that we hadn't considered before, or it just was a better fit for the kids. And then they kept homeschooling and here we are. And how crazy is it that it has been 6 years? Time just seems to keep flying faster and faster whenever these numbers come up. I know like that's come up before when I, you know, here on the podcast, I'm like, how do the words I've been homeschooling for 22 years come out of my mouth? Like I don't.
Wild.
It is wild. So much has happened, and it's been a great experience, but lots of learning for me as a mom. So, first of all, we're talking about project-based learning, but let's help our listeners understand what it is that we're talking about when we talk about project-based learning. So what is kind of your definition of project-based learning?
I think there's two types of project-based learning. I think we need to distinguish that right now. There's project-based that's like driven by the unit that your homeschool has, or the curriculum has said, work on this project. And then there are interest-led projects, which you still can sort of point and direct have a few learning goals, but it's something that they're really interested in. I think there's value in both, but I think that you and I have experienced this year the magic that comes when it's an actual interest-led project that they're working on. But yes, you have a lot less control there.
Right. Which can be a struggle for us as mamas. So then this actually brings me to kind of, we're going to talk about the class that Carla has set up for our boys and a couple of other boys in our local community that they get together and do together in a few minutes. But my first kind of foray into project-based learning very much had to do, it was almost a combination of what Carla is talking about how they're like projects that are driven from the curriculum itself versus an interest-led curriculum that is project-based. And when my oldest daughter was in high school, I had done high school in a more traditional way with my older sons, and she just was not going to fit that mold. And I could see that. I also, having had the experiences that I had with my sons, had decided that I wanted to do things a little bit differently with her. And one of the things that I could see, she was an incredibly creative young lady, and she is very artistic and thinks outside the box in so many ways. So as she would be studying with us as a group, as a family, we were using like morning time plans or wonder studies from Homeschool Better Together. We were using that as kind of the spine of what I was doing in morning time with my younger kids. But she was in high school and she needed some high school credits to go along with that material. But I would let her sit in and participate in the books and the studies that we were doing. And then she would take something that just sparked her interest from what we had discussed, and then she would create a project out of that on her own. So we did the Land That I Love plans from Homeschool Better Together, which is a geography study of the United States and is broken down by region. Well, she needed a history credit for American history for her high school. And so as we were studying these different regions of the United States, these historical topics would come up. And when something would strike her interest, she would create some sort of project to go along with that and really deep dive, do more research, and then present it back to me in some way. Often she would come back to our morning time table and share what she had learned with her siblings and kind of lead and teach for a little bit. But she ended up with notebooks filled with notes from documentaries and books she had read. And she did things like she drew like a beautiful map of Lewis and Clark's journey. She really did a deep dive into the civil rights movement because that was something that came up when we were studying the South. And that just really sparked her interest. So then she took that particular interest and expanded it into something that she was studying on her own at that higher level. And it was a really beautiful way for her to do high school. It let her express her creativity. She turned in all kinds of art projects, and she practiced doing PowerPoint presentations and creating notebooks. And it was just such a rich and varied level of like output that she was producing. But this child was very particularly driven and was like, I didn't have to give her a lot of direction. She would just take that and then run with it. And it was always going to be kind of above and beyond sometimes what I would even expect. So then the question came, how do I continue this idea of letting my child choose their own interests and like create these projects without making it so like assignment based of you must do this assignment, because if they really weren't enjoying it, then the result wasn't coming out the same. But my kids coming up after her that I wanted to implement this style of learning with just needed a little bit more direction. So I would love, a couple of things, like I would like you to share with us, Carla, kind of how, what your vision was for creating a course for older students that was interest-based and project-driven. And then also, as you kind of think through this, you could maybe talk about some of the things that would be pitfalls for project-based learning for high schoolers or for just homeschoolers in general. So like I said, I had personal experience with this from one child who was really just easy to implement. But then I was having to kind of navigate in my own homeschool and brain, like, how do I make this work for other students that maybe don't have as much of what that kind of natural creativity and that kind of thing. So I would love to kind of hear how you got to the place where you wanted to introduce this type of learning in a class format where we have multiple kids coming together to do this.
Well, where the class came from has a very specific pitfall that I was butting up against to answer. So I'm going to give you a little history to sort of guide us up to that point.
Okay, perfect.
So we started project-based learning before my kids were homeschooled.
Okay.
And so what does that look like? Well, I have no academic pressure, right? My kids are getting their academics from school. I'm sort of coming behind with a sweep. And so we started doing projects, and we would do some just independent. We did do quite a few for the fair, for 4-H, and became every summer, everybody would pick something that they were passionate about. And I think it's really cool right now to look back, and I look back at the projects my oldest did, and they fit right in with the career he's headed towards. And same with my second. He made a million different wildlife posters, and now he works at a wildlife discovery center. So you can sort of see these passions lead up. But once I started homeschooling, we had to get these projects done. We had to have this academic rigor. We had to have check all the lists. And then that's when passion and interest can really easily be stomped upon, I think, by the homeschool mom. Like, we have things to do. We have a list to check. And we need to make sure you're reading and you're doing math, and you can't come back to us in 20 years and say, you know, I'm illiterate and it's all your fault. Like, we have all these things we're trying to do. And so when we do a project, so last year I gave my youngest a castle project and he was really interested. You saw he had made like a portfolio drawing all kinds of castles. He had done all these things, and I wanted him to build a castle out of cardboard. And that was an assignment out of the curriculum. And I just sort of threw it to him, and it just fell flat. Like, we just couldn't get it done. Like, it was just a struggle. And it really started me reflecting on, like, how do I have some academic rigor? How do I offer some interest? And how do I hold us accountable? And that's why my class is so important. Because those boys, if they show up with junk, they're showing up with junk for their friends.
Right?
They're showing up with junk for other people. I think a lot of times interest-led projects need to be about other people. Need to be, am I going to show it at a nursing home? Am I going to show it at a class? Am I going to have a hard deadline? I have a procrastinator. He's never going to finish project if there's not a deadline. In fact, I mean, I would say most of my class are procrastinators. I think that's why we've been working really well, because they needed something to guide them. We needed some academic rigor. So I think you and I were standing in a bowling alley one day, and this idea sort of blew up into our brains, because I wanted to teach a class, but your son needed one class, my son needed another class, someone else's son needed another class. And so I developed this class with 9 projects that they're learning how to do the project. They're learning how to do a demonstration. They're learning how to do a research paper. They're learning how to do a creative project, how to do a slideshow. But other than that, they're in charge of what they're using to learn those things. So are they using geology? Are they using, one's using fencing. And when he said fencing, I thought about cattle fencing, but then realized he meant something else. And you might think, okay, so this child's going to spend a whole year on fencing. Like, what's he really going to learn? And when I look back and see what he has learned in patience, endurance, writing, thoughtful creating, empathy, watching documentaries about people fencing, he has learned more than I could have ever imagined you learned from fencing. But you know how hard it is for me to say, okay, yeah, fencing's good. That's really hard to let go of.
Well, and I think something that's interesting about that is we have an image in our mind of what the output should look like. And our kids don't often align with that. And when we come along beside them and they're like, oh, look at this project that you're going to do, and this is going to be so cool, and it's going to add so much value, and it's going to be awesome, and they're not enthusiastic about that, then it does fall flat because we don't really have the ability to come in and tell our kids what they're going to delight in. We can help lead them in certain directions, but I'm not the one that actually creates the passion within my child for a particular subject. And sometimes those subjects come up and they are a little bit out there. You're like, okay, if I'm creating a class, how do I create a class for fencing, right? I mean, in my mind, I would be like, okay, well, we need to put you on a fencing team and this could count as your PE credit. But I'm not thinking more broadly about the fact that we might study fencing for a whole year and learn about the history of fencing. And like, it's not a class that just came into my mind about how I would do that. So I think kind of one of the things that maybe we've been talking around and haven't exactly laid out for our listeners is, so the class that Carla is doing, she developed a curriculum for our kids to come together. They meet at her house and they talk about the project that is going to be worked on over the next certain period of time, right? So maybe they have 3 weeks to work on a project. And so they had to do a project that was a creative project. And she gave them a list of things and options. They could do a painting, they could build a model, they could do, like, really it was open-ended to them, but it needed to be something that showed creativity. At the beginning of the year, the projects that she laid out for them, you are going to be doing these 9 projects over the course of the year. And the goal for these high schoolers was that they would choose one topic to focus all of their projects on for the year. So my son chose architecture. That is just something that popped up randomly in a few conversations with him as I was discussing with him, like, what kind of electives do you want to take this year? What are you interested in studying and learning more about? So he's actually taking a class on architecture and he's learning about the history of that kind of stuff. And then like in addition to that, kind of alongside that, he's taking Carla's class where he's using a lot of the research and information that he's learning from his architecture class, and he's using that to create projects that he then comes together with other students, and they present their projects and they discuss and troubleshoot and they give each other feedback. When Dawn and I were talking in the previous episode about community-based learning and just coming together with other homeschool families, we both mentioned like that positive peer pressure that Carla just mentioned. Your kids don't want to go to their friends with junk. When you have a group of kids that come together and they're all given a similar assignment, they want to come with quality work that they want to share with somebody else. And when they see one kid doing something, then they recognize like, oh, wow, they put in a lot more effort than I did. And then the next project, all of a sudden, that positive peer pressure works in my favor. And then my kid is leveling up what he's doing because he sees the work that some of the other kids have done. And it gives them a place to share and to like kind of have pride in what they've done. So for my son's creative project for this class, he actually created a model of the Sydney Opera House. He's studying architecture and he wanted to present that. But she had students, one of them painted, oh, it was amazing. He did a painting of a fencing scene, and I guess had all kinds of information about this particular scene and the types of swords that were being used, and had done a lot of research, but then the creative aspect of that project was that he actually was learning artistic skills and painting it. Carla, you can tell them a little bit about like what your son is doing this class.
I did want to talk about my son for a minute. My 10th grader is a history lover. And when we started the class, he wanted to do history. And doing interest-led doesn't mean that you can't nudge them towards something else. And I said, hey, we want you to have a STEM credit. You love baking. I'm asking you to do this on food science. He wasn't necessarily happy about being assigned food science. So for this interest-led project-based class, I assigned him his subject. But I did thoughtfully think about a subject that has shown interest in, and then I let go. So his projects are pretty history-based. The project he's working on right now is his capstone project is all about cheese. And so I will probably get pages and pages and pages on the history of cheese. And I got pages on pages on the history of the invention of the FDA. Now, my vision for what he was going to do was going to be much more food chemistry. And when I assigned the creative project, I was like, perfect. You can do some cool foaming, make, boba tea type food chemistry thing. And he picked something completely different. He made two identical cakes. They were just totally identical, but one was like all styrofoam and one was a four-layer black and white cake with fondant, like skills that he's never demonstrated before in the kitchen to make two identical cakes. And then he asked his peers to choose which cake was a fake. And only Lainey's son got it right. The two of them got it wrong. And so he didn't learn what I wanted him to learn. And I had to let go of that. He learned a lot of really important things. And one thing that was really well learned in that class was the need for practice, or for, I'm missing the word, for a
prototype.
Both Lainey's son and my son really needed a prototype, and they learned that. Now, could have I, in my assignment, said make a prototype and then 2 weeks later make the final? Yes, I could have. But I think they learned much more by running into the problems not having a prototype caused. And yeah. So that's when you're doing project-based learning, you've got to let go a little bit to let them make their mistakes, let them guide their learning, because they're going to learn a lot if you really encourage them to learn. But if you say, no, you need to do it this way, which that's what I want to do most of the time. Most of the time, I would be like, no. That's no. You've got to just sit in your chair, and especially with the high schoolers, ask good questions, but then let them make what they're going to make.
Yeah, I think this is such great advice. And I noticed that one of the things that my son is learning more through this class has to do with the time management, executive function skills, having to meet deadlines, having to turn projects into somebody else, presentation skills. He's learning so much more that is beyond the scope of the knowledge of architecture. And I think that's one of the things that you're talking about here, is that we go into a course sometimes or a topic of study with a vision of what we expect our kids to learn. And then when we're so tightly holding on to that we forget to let them like actually learn the things that they would naturally learn from the experiences of the doing of the project itself is just as much of an education as the information that they are having to learn for the project.
I agree with you. And I think that points to another pitfall, in that a lot of times we're looking at the project as what we're achieving, what we're clicking off the box. And that's what I really try to do in my class, is we talk about timelines over and over and over again. Okay, look, you are busy. You work on these days. You have basketball on these days. You have choir on these days. this is a huge project. And when I gave them their capstone project recently, which I assigned it in January, it's due in April, asking 15 and 16 year old boys to think that big is really hard. I'm not letting them interest led themselves through that. I am holding their hand through that. We're, you know, I'm saying you have to have your research done by this day. You need to sit down and type, start your document. When I asked them to all start their document last week, start their document that's due in April, they looked at me like, are you serious? Are you serious right now? That's what you're asking us to do? Those are the kinds of things, the academic addressing that you can do and then take your hands off of what are they going to write about? What are they right. going to make? And it's uncomfortable. So you're going to have kids, my son and then one other boy, who really panic at this freedom. Well, I don't know what to choose. I do not know what to choose. I know whole days have been ruined because they don't know what to choose. Well, isn't that a really important skill as well? And right. so your daughter, she just has all these ideas. Knowing what to choose is not hard for her. She's just going to keep doing.
Right.
But you can't let this fear of so many choices let your kids stop doing projects. They need to learn how to work through that.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it totally does. Because like I said, my daughter, I didn't ever have to nudge her. Like it was, I just explained to her the parameters of what I wanted her to accomplish. And that was, okay, take what we're doing in morning time. I want you to choose something that sparks your interest from that. I want you to do more research and gain a broader understanding of that and show me what you have learned. Literally, that's all the structure I had to give her. And she was going to come up with these creative and, you know, really beautifully done projects because that was easy for her. That's where her strength was. That's actually what led me into kind of pursuing this kind of education with her, was because she was just so driven that way. And I could just see the benefits of that. And I wanted to introduce that. But I have other children who are like paralyzed by decision making. And I have a child that actually came up to me and was like, is there a class in decision making? Because I like just can't make a decision to save my life. And we kind of chuckled about it. It was a joke. And it was, but yeah, I think giving them some structure and kind of scaffolding that support and letting them know, like, I'm giving you this large assignment, but I'm not just turning you loose and giving you no structure at all. I think that has been one of the really beneficial things, is like having the set meeting time where we come back and we talk about what kind of progress we're making on our projects, what is the next step, and teaching kids how to have a bigger goal and having to break that down into smaller pieces that are easier to execute on is a skill that I know that some of my kids have definitely needed. And that is part of the beauty of having this project-based learning, is it's the project is this larger goal. And then to help them break that down and to have it, them see the steps along the way so that they can make progress on that goal without just freezing and being paralyzed and saying, it's too big, it's too much, I'm too overwhelmed. And this is really kind of akin to like the child who sees the full math page and is just so overwhelmed by it. And they're like, I can't do it. I can't solve the math page. But if you cut apart, I think I learned this from Colleen Kessler from Raising Lifelong Learners, is like if you cut apart the math sheet and then have them just work one problem at a time, they're still doing the math, but they're less overwhelmed because they don't have the visual input of all of the other problems on the page. And so then they're able to like isolate that one thing and work on that without the overwhelm of seeing how much is left to do. And I think that for my kids, so I struggle with executive function. We deal with ADHD in my home. And for my children, it is really a skill that has to be taught to be able to manage taking a larger task and breaking it down into small pieces. And this type of learning has really helped to teach some of those skills. And again, it's not just throwing them out there for them to flounder and figure it out. There is this sense of structure that comes alongside of it. And I also think that the point you're making about being able to kind of let our hands loose, hold loosely to what your expectations are, because your kids are going to amaze you with what they produce apart from what you had the vision for. And I think that has been one of the most beautiful things. So they're learning all of these really valuable life skills, but then they're producing things that just absolutely astonish me. I'm like, wow, I wouldn't have expected this, or you had this creative idea.
And I want to speak a minute to the mom who's listening to this and saying, well, that's great. I don't have people. I don't have someone to teach this class. I'm not good at doing those things. Like, what does that mean to me? Like, how can I implement interest-led learning, interest-led project learning into my home if I can't even really do that or participate? And one thing I want to say to that is, I think the first thing you need to do is give yourself false due dates. We're going to make this project and show it to Grandpa when he comes into town on August 2nd. We're going to the nursing home on this day. We're going to, you could organize a project play date where you invite other moms and everybody brings their project and start really small. We're talking about high school level project learning. And that's really important. But like, start little. That's where I started when my oldest was 5, and we made little things for the fair. Then we joined 4-H and they made big project boards and that kind of stuff. We didn't start with all of these due dates and all of these things. We started small, and then I would identify, okay, this child needs this skill. I'm going to try to weave it in. This child is a procrastinator. He needs accountability. I'm going to invent a class. That's not what everybody's going to do, but there is an answer. But start with just the project. What is your child in love with? Are they in love with weather? Go to weather, like a storm sighting class with your child. Have them draw a picture. That's the beginning. Show your child that you are interested in their interests, and their interests are important, and their interests are not part of your school. If you only do this in the light of school, it's going to not translate as well. This
right.
has to be just part of your life, part of your rhythm. A lot of our projects are done in the summer, and they're learning an awfully lot, but they don't think they're doing school. They just they just know that they're doing a project. My youngest, we have lots of rabbits, more rabbits than you should have, but my youngest decided he was going to try to sell rabbit poop fertilizer, and he did. And we learned a lot about a chemistry. He learned about how to email the horticulture extension agent to find out what the different values of the different minerals were, how to test, how to make liquid fertilizer. All of these things had nothing to do with school, but right. he learned a lot. I would have never assigned a project on rabbit poop ever, but he
crossed your mind.
Wouldn't have crossed my mind. But so that's the thing. Like, don't try to pick, or don't try to steer your kids to traditional ideas. It can be sourdough. It can be the type of teeth wildlife have. It can be making cards that light up. Those are all projects we've done, but in my school, in my family, not necessarily in my homeschool. But
right.
don't make it just about school. Make it about their interests.
Well, I think that is really great advice, because that's part of that building the culture of being lifelong learners, modeling that for your kids. So when my kids see me like experimenting with something new or trying something out, reading a book on a new topic, they're watching me be curious, taking the time to answer their questions when they come up, when you don't know them, and showing them that you don't have all the answers, but that you can find the answers. Is part of like building that culture of raising kids who are going to like continue to learn and learn how to learn, so that when they have their interests and things that they want to pursue outside of your homeschool, that they're encouraged to do so and providing that kind of environment. I really, really liked the idea that you were saying a minute ago. This is like the start small. So one of our mottos here at Homeschool Better Together, especially involving morning time, is start small and build slow. You know, there's not, don't come up with this grand scheme of what your expectations are, but come alongside and encourage your children in doing and giving them the freedom and the supplies to do things. When he's what, 21 now, but when he was younger, he had a collection of cardboard and trash that literally would just drive me crazy. I just wanted
to. My 21-year-old had cardboard and trash too. That's funny. We should have known each other back then.
We laughed so hard when he was younger. We were always like, he's going to like own a junkyard or something when he gets older, because he had so much trash. I remember one day he got upset with me because he thought I was throwing away the macaroni and cheese box. And I was like, it's literal trash. Like, he was like, no, because he could see something. He had a purpose for that. And he was constantly making and creating things and giving them the freedom and the time in their life to be able to explore and just create and things that you would be like, oh, well, why would you do that? So I've noticed in reading a lot of picture books to my kids is often people who have accomplished great things or people who are worthy of having picture books written about their lives, right? Or these people are often children who were given a lot of free time to explore and kind of just be outside and to pursue their interests. We were reading a book about John James Audubon not that long ago, and he was, you know, he was like hanging out in the cave with birds and exploring and drawing and taking notes, and none of this was his school. And that's the part that's resonating with me here. You're like, it doesn't have to be something that is completely academic and assigned, but especially when they're younger, when we give them that freedom to explore their interest and we support that by giving them the time and space in their life to do that without filling their schedule so full that they don't have time for that freedom, but also giving them a little bit of guidance and, you know, being able to come alongside them whenever they have an interest in showing your own curiosity about what they're interested in. And I think it really boils down to like knowing your kids, and it can develop into something more formal and structured, like we're talking about with this class that we're doing with our boys this semester.
Audubon actually had just come to my mind when you mentioned it, but I think he harnessed his interest.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I want to challenge other homeschool moms to do. Harness the interest and then weave in a few learning skills. Like, does your child want to sell eggs? Can you weave in some math? Does your child want to do fertilizer, weave in some chemistry? But I think we need to be doing more of harnessing their interests.
Yes.
Because a lot of the world is trying to make them uninterested in things. A lot of the technology, a lot of the games, and so we need to stand up and say, your interests are great. They're wonderful. They're uniquely you. Let's harness that as we walk through education together.
Yeah, I think that is a wonderful place to kind of like end this episode and leave our listeners thinking about that. So as you go through your day after listening to this, I want to encourage you to observe your children and see where those natural interests lie, and then try to creatively think outside the box about the gentle ways that you can encourage that. And then as they begin to become comfortable exploring those interests, then, you know, you might be able to find some ways to kind of build that into your academic program if that is something that seems like it would be a good fit. And it doesn't, again, start small, build slow. It doesn't have to be complicated. You can do this with just individual families as well. You don't have to have a group of people to come together to do that. It can just be, I mean, that's what you were talking about early on, is like, this is just something we just started as our family. And it was just part of our family culture. We did it over the summer. We did it around our traditional like public schooling and private school. It wasn't something that was always like started out as that academic piece. It was just part of our family culture and our life that we lived. And I really love that. I think it's beautiful. So it is great fun to watch our kids kind of explore and take advantage of the free time in a positive and productive way, rather than just escaping into like technology. We have, I think it is a pretty common battle these days that parents are fighting against the screen time and just video games and phones and the constant input from outside sources. And so how is it that we can encourage our kids to kind of own their interests and look for productive ways to pursue them rather than just receiving constant input from the world? So, well, thank you very much for joining me today, Carla. I have really enjoyed this conversation. It has been one that I have really been encouraged by, and gives it's it, like, even though my kiddo is in your class and we've had this conversation a number of times, I love the way that this has kind of given me new perspective on thinking about some of the things that I can do with even my younger kids and how we can really incorporate this idea into some family learning and just build it as a part of our culture into our family. So thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
That's our show for today. Be sure to follow, subscribe, and leave a review so you never miss out on the wonder of homeschooling better together. To stay connected and learn even more about the Homeschooling Better Together resources and to join our free community, visit hsbtpodcast.com. Until next week, keep stepping out of the overwhelm and into the wonder.